Welcome to the Oral History Review at the Oxford University Press blog. Occasionally, we like to break up the monotony of text posts with a podcast, celebrate the oral and oral history, so to speak. With these podcasts, we hope to give the Oral History Review's authors and editors a place to elaborate on or build upon their scholarship. Furthermore, as with all of our social media efforts, we aim to build awareness of the art and craft of oral history. The following podcast is hosted by Troy Reeves, the Oral History Review's Managing Editor and Head of the Oral History Program at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Enjoy.
Thanks, Caitlin. Today we're here with Annie Vock. Annie is the Associate Director of Programs at the John Nichols Brown Center for Public Humanities and Cultural Heritage at Brown University. And we're here with Holly Ewald. Holly Ewald is an artist and the founder of the Urban Pond Procession. So we are here talking with Annie and Holly about their article. It was entitled Bringing a Hidden Pond to Public Attention, Increasing Impact Through Digital Tools. I want to thank you both for having a title that didn't have any of the place names in it, so I didn't have to mispronounce them right off the bat. This article is appearing in the Oral History Review's upcoming issue, Volume 40, Number 1, which is subtitled Oral History in the Digital Age. First off, I wonder if you could each talk a bit about your specific projects that brought you together. So maybe, Annie, if you wouldn't mind first talking about the Brown's Public Humanities Center.
Sure. This is Annie, and I have been working at the Public Humanities Center at Brown since I moved to Rhode Island in 2007. And one of the things that excited me about coming to the Public Humanities Center was the opportunity to work in a much more interdisciplinary manner than I had been working when I had been teaching history within the context of a history department. So I was really excited about thinking about how my practice as an oral historian could be enriched and how I could really grow in new ways by thinking about oral history within a more interdisciplinary context. And in particular, at the Brown Public Humanities Center, I work very closely with Brown undergraduates and with graduate students who are getting an MA in public humanities. And most of those graduate students are really interested in careers working in cultural organizations or working on public engagement projects that focus on bringing community organizations together with the public to explore cultural heritage and public humanities and local traditions and culture. So they're very interested in thinking about oral history as a tool for understanding and documenting the public significance of the humanities. So, for instance, thinking about what's important about local history, how do people express local culture or community. They're also really interested in thinking about oral history as a way to engage the public and how they could use oral history from the context of a museum or a historical society, for instance, to build connections between that organization and the public and to develop ways of collaboration and engagement. So I started a couple of different community oral history projects when I got here, mostly focused around geographic communities, particularly neighborhoods in Providence, thinking that I could use those projects as a way to teach oral history methods to students and to create an archive of materials and a set of relationships with local people and local organizations, all of which could be the basis for developing public projects and programs. So everything from exhibits to cell phone tours to educational programs in the local elementary schools. So I've been trying to do that in my work here at the center, and that's what brought me to getting interested in working with Holly.
Thank you, Annie. So Holly, I wonder if you could now talk a little bit about what led to the Urban Pond Procession.
This is Holly. What led me to the Urban Pond Procession was a request by the Rhode Island Department of Health to the Rhode Island State Council for the Arts to find an artist who could work with the community to create new signs that would be posted around Mashapog Pond, which is a very large pond in South Providence. It's the last remaining natural pond in the city. And that pond is pretty polluted from industrial waste as well as storm drain runoff. The fish are unhealthy to eat, and swimming is not very safe during the late summer and early fall. And a lot of the people that are attracted to this pond wouldn't necessarily be English speakers, and the signs that existed around the pond were all in English and very text-laden. So somebody at the health department thought it would be really great if maybe an artist who was more of a visual thinker could work with the community and come up with some signs that were more universally understood. So the Rhode Island State Council for the Arts got in touch with me because they knew I had a history of working with communities. So I visited the pond and was just captivated by it and started talking to some people I met as I walked around the pond and realized that there was some history to this pond, to the land around it, and it seemed very intriguing to me. And so I said, definitely, I would be interested. So that first year, my mission was to create these signs with the community. And I realized soon on, when I went to a public meeting about what was going on to clean up the pond and deal with some of the toxins in the land and in the waters due to the Gorham Silver Manufacturing Company, that there weren't a whole lot of folks from the neighborhood coming to these public meetings. And I thought, well, you know, they need signs, but they also need people to be animated about this and learn about this. So I decided that I needed to do something on the streets, which led to this idea of doing a procession. And the designs were produced by students at two schools in the neighborhood, were then silkscreened onto, and posters were made, which were then used in the procession. And then I also worked with a group at the Buddhist temple nearby to create fish costumes. I wanted this to be a celebratory kind of event and get people out of their houses on the streets and joining us and learning about the pond and trying to develop some stewardship of the pond. And that was 6 years ago, and more artists have become involved and more schools have become involved. And June 1st, we will have our sixth procession.
And I want to talk specifically about the class you co-taught, the Oral History and Community Memory class.
Okay, this is Annie. I'll start off, and then Holly, please jump in. The Oral History and Community Memory class, I had taught several times before, really pretty much once a year since I've been here at Brown. We had been focusing on a different neighborhood in Providence, a neighborhood that's right near campus, and for a variety of reasons, I was interested in shifting the location of the class and exploring a different place. As I said before, I was really interested in thinking about how oral history could fit within a very multidisciplinary or interdisciplinary program. Holly and I had met a few years ago. It's Rhode Island, everybody knows each other. And so, I had seen one of her exhibits, which was focused on another community, not around Mashpog, where Holly had worked with a folklorist and collected stories and used them as the basis for an exhibit about that neighborhood. And I'd been really impressed by the work that she had done, and that led to a series of conversations between the two of us about the ways in which we were working on community-based projects and really thinking about community-based work and how to do work that was focused on places that could be done in a collaborative fashion with community members and use storytelling as a way to illuminate the place and especially really deeply layered history in different ways. So we decided to teach this oral history class together, And we did that in the fall of 2011, and we're now currently in the midst of teaching it together again, focusing on MASH-POG and on the neighborhoods around it, trying to interview a variety of people who have connections to that place, from people who currently live there to people who used to live there, people who used to work at some of the manufacturing and other workplaces in the area, and then also talking to people who've been active in efforts to try and deal with the environmental issues at the site.
Holly, do you have anything you'd like to add about the class?
Well, one of the things that's been interesting is the first class, we did a final project that the students did with a pop-up museum. It was wonderful to see how the students interpreted the oral histories that they had collected and then used objects to help them share what some of those oral histories meant to them and maybe could mean to the audience, to help those stories have an alive sense to them and so that people could connect to them.
I guess I'd say, too, jumping off of that, that the oral history and community memory class has changed a lot, both over the 2 years that we've taught it together and also changed significantly from when I was teaching it by myself, and that we've been really trying to, through the class, explore the overlap between the ways in which an oral historian and a practicing artist whose work is based in community, how we think about site-specific work, how we think about working in and with and together with community, and then really trying to think creatively about how do you represent people's stories through oral means as well as through visual and material objects, and then how can you take the collision of what an artist's approach and an oral historian's approach and think about ways to then present those stories back in the public. So the pop-up museum was the first experiment in doing that, and then this semester's class is going to be creating a cell phone tour that will put the stories back out in the place through signage and through audio tour that will have the stories out there back by the pond. We're not sure how that's going to work yet.
We're figuring yeah, there it may out. Be some imagery to go with the signs mm-hmm. that connect to that place. It's a work in progress, and we'll see what the students come up with.
Yeah, I guess the other thing I'd say about the class is one of the things that I love about the class and has become even more true since we've been teaching it together is that the class draws a really amazing variety of students, very creative students, most of whom are not historians, and most of whom now don't come from the public humanities program. They're Brown undergraduates, and what's drawing them to the class is either that they've heard about the urban pond procession because they're engaged in the Providence community, especially through environmental activism, or they're coming to the class because it's the community engagement piece that's really of interest to them. So they are coming from environmental studies and ethnic studies and urban studies, and this semester we have somebody from biology and community health. And so they're really there because they're interested in thinking about how can oral history and community art be these kinds of tools for community engagement that they might use from all of these different kinds of disciplinary approaches.
Maybe one more thing, and this is something we try to do with everyone who we do a podcast with who has written an article for OHR, and that's give you space if there's anything that you'd like to add to your article, but you weren't, you know, for whatever reason, able to get it into the final version.
I just think it's been wonderful to think about these things for this article, and it's a great opportunity for us to springboard and talk more in depth about our collaboration and teaching together.
And I guess the other thing that I would add at the end is it was an interesting, challenging exercise for me, and I think for both of us, to think about where the digital fits into this work, because both of us really frame the work that we do around face-to-face interactions and seeing it as this process of relationship building. So the digital has been a key tool, but it's also been kind of in the background because it seems like it's something that plays a role of serving these larger goals that we both have in the work that we do. It was an interesting and useful exercise to think about how the digital fits in and how it facilitates the community building and in some ways how it also shifts dynamics in the classroom and the dynamics between the work of the university and the work of the community.
Annie, thank you for that. And Holly, thank you for your comment too. Is there anything else either of you want to say about your collaboration, about this piece, about possible future collaborations?
This is Annie. Holly and I were talking just before you called, Troy, about how we need to sit down and have a conversation about where the collaboration is headed. And so I don't think we know, but I think we both have felt like it's been incredibly productive and fascinating, and I have found it to be an amazing learning experience for me. So I'm not sure where we're headed next, but I know that there's lots of rich possibilities out there.
And this is Holly. It's just really gratifying to me. I've been in education for over 30 years, and it's just wonderful to see how, on the academic level of Brown and working with Annie, that there's such serious attention being given to working with community and trying to give students a real life experience in terms of working with the community and a very serious problem, and it's important, and I would love to see education moving more in this direction. I just think it will improve our world.
Holly Ewald, thank you. And Holly and Annie Valk are the co-authors of a piece that will be upcoming in the Oral History Reviews, Volume 40, Number 1. The piece is called Bringing a Hidden Pond to Public Attention, Increasing Impact Through Digital Tools. I want to thank you both for letting me talk to you today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Troy, for giving us the opportunity.
Thank you, Troy.